Welcome back to Four of a Kind podcast, where you will learn from real life experiences of amazing women and male allies too, who support our mission to increase women's representation in business leadership. You will hear from founders, investors, startup contributors, corporate leaders, and our own journeys too. We want this podcast to empower you to go start that business, take that big job, and do it with confidence. So join us and exciting guests, and let's figure out what we can do to get there.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle, and welcome to this week's episode. First of all, to all our listeners, we hope that you and your loved ones are healthy and safe during this time. Our hearts go out to all those who have family and friends who've been directly impacted by the coronavirus. We hope that they are able to get the treatment they need to recover. And our sympathies go out to the ones who've lost the battle too. Lastly, we also want to thank the first responders, health professionals, and business essential workers who risk their lives every day going to work to ensure the rest of us can stay safe. Thank you, and we dedicate this episode to all of you guys. For today's episode, we thought that it would be apropos to talk about the pandemic that has 1 in 5 individuals in some version of shelter in place around the world. Many articles and bloggers and others have opined on the future impact to society, whether from a physical health standpoint, a societal and or economic well-being standpoint, and even from an environmental standpoint. The one thing we haven't seen as much from a published content standpoint is around the inequality of the impact to women just within their households. Whether you're a career lady or a full-time homemaker, generally speaking, you've been carrying a disproportionate mental load.
Some of you brought this topic to our attention a few weeks ago. Basically, when we all started having virtual happy hours and those sort of online vent sessions and sharing their funny or not so funny experiences with us, even some of us hosting this podcast have our own examples of those kind of shutdown or staying at home has changed our everyday lives.
So we're not going to just complain, quote unquote, during this episode. In fact, we definitely want to unpack some positive impacts that this situation can have on women from a workplace equity standpoint and getting us to parity from a leadership standpoint and how we think about leaders generally, like what are the characteristics of a leader? I think oftentimes or historically we had a vision of who makes a leader, like what those characteristics are, often based on a male executive. Now there's opportunity to shatter some of those prior stereotypes.
So we've pulled from some articles that briefly touch on these topics, but we want to go deeper. And ladies, I think this is the longest prologue we've ever had. So let's get started.
We've heard a lot of examples from friends and colleagues and peers about how everyone is managing this quote unquote new normal. And I'm not sure it's like new normal is even a good word, because I think for a lot of folks, it's trying to plan for a situation which you don't know how long it's going to last, which adds another layer of complexity for sure. Like, is it temporary? How temporary is it? There's a difference between a week and 3 weeks and 3 months. This is not just like a shift to a new way of working. This is really a time with a lot of unknowns. But I think we've definitely heard a lot of examples of women taking on larger portion of the quote unquote mental load, whether or not you evenly distribute like the physical work required in your household. Who are the people doing the planning and the prepping and coordinating and all the little things to get everyone moving from task to task, or like just to get through the day and prepare for the next day? And I know we've seen a number of articles about that to say this is not the same for men in their households. I think that we've seen a lot of women sort of default into that teacher, cook, clean role, which maybe families previously had been able to outsource, for example. And so I think maybe that's why we're seeing it come up more often in terms of the household. What have you guys seen or heard from people you know?
I'm not a mom, but I do have a number of friends and colleagues who do have multiple children who typically go to school when they go to work. And that's one of the most interesting dynamics that I was made really aware of past couple of weeks, where these moms not only are working moms or just, you know, they have things to do during the day, even if they're when they are full-time homemakers, where now they're full-time teachers sitting next to their children who are going to school online. It's an interesting dynamic that whether the moms take it upon themselves or they just were defaulted to those situations in addition to doing their full-time job. There are, I'm sure, other examples, but one of the solutions that some of my friends and colleagues have shared with me is, how do you bring your kids into a structure that fits both your needs and the child's needs? One of the most creative things I've heard a lot of creative solutions, but one of them is to create structure that allows for both me time, which some people say is like my gym time. Previously, I used to go to the gym before I went to work, but now I do yoga with my kids in the morning and there's a set time to do that. So it allows for a physical output of energy on all the people's part, but also allows for that same type of structure or similar type of structure that was there before.
I don't have any kids either, but I've been in enough conference calls with a screaming child in the background or like some cooking happening. But one thing that we did, this work from home experiment. So you guys know I'm in an innovation team, so we're supposed to be the innovators of the firm. So we actually started working from home before everyone was mandated. Just before things escalated, we said, you know, why don't we try if we can survive working from home. And this is everyone on the team to work from home, you know, whatever, 2-3 days a week or something. And one of the solutions the team came up with, or at least those with children, is to split childcare and actually have a schedule. And we try to work in terms of scheduling meetings and things like that around, you know, their schedule. So instead of just saying, hey, like, you know, you take care of our kid 50% of the time, they will actually have set time of from this time to this time, I'm going to have to focus on work 100%. You take care of our child during these hours. And then we switch spots. So that's something I heard that's been helpful to not just moms, but parents in general, working from home during this time.
This is Lauren, the only mommy, I think, in the crew. So, I mean, I don't obviously have kids that are school age. So that's a whole nother level of complication, I think. Especially I've heard, you know, people with multiple kids, and so they're at different age levels that you're trying to make sure they're staying engaged and trying to keep up with some semblance of school, but also trying to balance that with a lot of playtime and free time, just because it is more of a stressful situation than just going to school. So, you know, I can't imagine, that's a whole nother level of difficulty that parents are having to deal with right now. But in terms of kind of my situation with a 6-month-old, it's not easy. I worked from home a lot already. So, you know, kind of getting used to what my office setup was and having the baby being here with a nanny in the background, or I didn't have to get used to that. That was already kind of something that I was prepared for and kind of understood how to balance and like let, even though I'm there, let other people do it. But without having, you know, an extra set of hands, it does get more challenging, because essentially having my husband work from home and me work from home full time, you do something similar to what Grace said. You either have a very structured, these are the hours I work, these are the hours that you're going to work, and then we flip back and forth. But, or you do something like what me and Matt do, which is, I have a call right now, can you take him? Is this a call that you cannot have a baby on with, or you can? Like, okay, I have a call from 1 to 3 with a client today. So I cannot have a baby during that time. So that's kind of the discussion that happens every day. It's a whole lot more planning and different kind of planning, because, you know, before it was like, all right, who's going to drop the baby off where today? Who's going to, or something similar to that. It's just a different like set of logistics you have to think through. And we kind of come do it on the fly, because it's just, I don't know if that's more stressful or less stressful to kind of do it that way. But I feel lucky in the way also that I get to not work out, because that's, you know, impossible to sort of have like locked time where I get, you know, a time set to myself, but I feel lucky that I do get to go on long walks. I have a lot of space, but anything that I actually get to take the baby with me, it's sort of like with kids, you kind of do what you know your kids need at the time. And so I think fresh air is probably a good answer to kind of a lot of pent up energy. And I see a lot of moms and dads that are, you know, making art and craft time and like basically, Kelsey, you'll enjoy this. I believe I told you trying to find puzzles anywhere is like next to impossible.
Yeah, they're sold out.
Back order everywhere.
The world
everywhere.
Is sold out of puzzles.
And I'm like, it's all those parents that are like, here, this will take you a long time. But yeah, I mean, there's a variety of ways that I've heard, and obviously I mentioned one earlier, and that was the kind of virtual happy hour. And luckily, you know, it's not very often where I can bring the baby to virtual happy hour, but he's come, or to real happy hour, but he's come to all the virtual happy hours at this point.
Yeah, I think one of the things that just in this situation will be interesting to see is like which pieces of these solutions become more permanent going forward and what's like purely a function of living in a crisis. And I think there's some parts of this that we don't want to assume are, well, if you work from home, this is what it has to look like. Like, no, that's not really the case. But also like we've now all been forced to do this and really think about how we might approach the situation. And maybe there's some pieces of this, you know, how you structure your day or having everyone having more flexibility with your, like sort of giving yourself some leeway to figure out what you need and also giving other people like that leeway to figure out what they need and then just see how you can work together. I think there was this expectation that you had to do everything a certain way. And if you couldn't make your schedule work with your company's schedule, then, you know, there was a mismatch there, but maybe there's more flexibility than we think and we can carry some of that forward. And then I think the other piece here that we sort of started out with was, is this also a little experiment and seeing like, is there a parent or a member of the household that sort of takes on some of that additional work? And then maybe there are more conversations happening about distribution or redistribution of some of it, because everyone's sort of sitting there to see, like, there's no, like, you can't leave and like not quite understand what's going on at home. There's like everyone's part of it. Which I think leads us some of our next point, but the situation of remote working is really shining a light on the reality of working parents and working moms as a subset of that group. And I think especially if you think about like the history of the workplace, men have often been in a position of leaving the house every day and maybe not necessarily being part of all of the little things that happen between working hours. And I think obviously that's been changing over time, but now everyone is seeing all of the things that are required to, you know, make it through the day as a working parent or just running a household, whatever that is. And is that like light, is the light shining on that aspect of like male, female relationship equality going to bring like expedite in some ways some positive impacts or some positive solutions, more equality, whether it's at home or in the workplace, because now, you know, there's no hiding from what's going on.
Yeah, I completely agree with your points, Kelsey. I would imagine there's a lot of, you know, you'll get a lot of people and dads in particular who don't typically spend their time at home or don't typically work from home, who just would come to this realization that, where I'm not saying they didn't previously have any understanding whatsoever, but it's hard to truly understand without having previously put yourself in the working mom's shoes. And seeing it firsthand, I'm sure, just opened up a lot of opportunities to have conversations around those and probably increasing empathy a little bit more because you see it day to day. And it's not just, it's been what, 3 weeks now for certain, or maybe a month or longer for certain places, right? Where you've been working remotely for a long time. I mean, that's a long time. ignore certain things anymore because you see it firsthand and you've seen it, you've seen it enough to realize that it's the reality.
It's not just the redistribution of work inside the household. That's one piece of it. And finding empathy for the people that you see every day. But typically parents, they, maybe it's not, the most obvious thing, but you like to think they have empathy for all the stuff that they're doing for their kids already. But I think a lot of places where the empathy side is changing is your coworkers and your supervisors are seeing kids in the background or you juggling a whole lot of stuff and trying to make it work and be flexible. And I think it's also having empathy for all those people that you didn't know at that kind of level before. And you're now sort of forced to, but it's a good thing that, because these are the people that you spend most of your time with, right? You spend 40 hours at least a week with them, which sometimes is more than you actually get on a weekly basis with your family. So they should have a lot of empathy for all that time that you spend with them. And now I think it's kind of being thrust upon people, and it's making kind of those what used to be sort of more corporate boundaries disappear or get fuzzier, which can be a good thing. So people actually feel that these are people with a lot of facets to their lives, not just what you see every day.
Yeah, that empathy also leads to patience. Empathy is created because we're over communicating with our colleagues, our friends, our family members, whether they live with us or they communicate with us because they can't be in the same household because of shelter in place. But we're as a society over communicating what we're feeling, what we're doing, just because what was not as transparent before needs to be brought to light so that we can make accommodations and be the most productive, whether it's at work or at home. And my husband and I, we've started talking a whole lot about this particular dynamic because, well, there's only so much to talk about. And we're, I guess, work buddies now because we're working in the same apartment. So it allows for those sorts of conversations that didn't exist before. And I think that's helping change that dynamic and what Kelsey was talking about before, which may lead to us collaborating and working together differently in the future now that we're over communicating and changing our communication styles, as well as being more aware of things that we weren't aware of before, or maybe it was in our subconscious, but we didn't point it out as obviously before.
Yeah, and when we're talking about over-communication, good, bad, or indifferent, it's typically a stereotype that is associated with women more than it is with men. And so I think that kind of ties back to the whole discussion of leadership, is that are women leaders well-positioned to sort of have that patience, that empathy, and over communicate to their teams. And that's helping, I think, everyone kind of get used to what they're dealing with on a daily basis. And is that helping them work harder, work more productive, be efficient, better the long-term value for their companies? All of those things go into those dynamics that might change in the long run once, everything kind of goes back to semi-normal.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So there was an article in Forbes that suggested what you just talked about, Lauren, which is female leaders have these characteristics. And some of these characteristics are traits like collaboration, resourcefulness, proactive communication and listening, relationship building, and the other things that you mentioned too, Lauren. And because of certain dynamics in the workplace, this article, which I'll make sure that we have in the notes, suggests that women have had to develop a stronger sense of innovation because they've lacked access to, now, quote, levers of authority, access to funding, instant credibility with their male counterparts, et cetera. The interesting thing about this article is that the author aligns those particular characteristics with what is now known as environmental, social, and governance ratings. In short, it's ESG. There's a correlation between the ESG ratings for stock and their performance. But also what's interesting is that those are also conveniently the leadership traits that female leaders tend to have. will this particular environment and situation that we're in right now push those companies who have already been trying to embody those ESG ratings even further, more quickly? And will they appreciate those qualities a whole lot more because of this situation?
Well, in a lot of cases, companies, I think, hold a lot of their value in their employees, right? Like that's what you can, if you have really good people working for you and you can get them behind a mission and, you know, really get them to be engaged. I think that, you know, that overall will lead to longer term, greater performance for your company. So I think if that's something that is now going to really be important to employees as they're looking for companies, I think it's something companies have to pay attention to, right? You're going to attract the right talent because you have good ESG ratings, because you really pay attention to things that are not necessarily just financial metrics, but sort of these non-quantitative metrics, I guess.
Sort of similar to what we were talking about earlier, if this is an opportunity for those trends to accelerate, then that is a good thing for women, female leaders, and also those who are striving to be in those positions too. If we have this moment of crisis, which, you know, is unfortunate in a million ways, but also like if it really can expedite this change curve, I think that there is a lot of potential opportunity for women to go into their roles and sort of lead in the way that they, I guess, well, I'm not, this is not the same for every person, but just like on an individual level to lead like in your own style. And I think we're seeing that those styles that are potentially broader are focused not just on crunching numbers, but also all of these things. I don't think it's like at the expense of crunching numbers in any way, but there's a lot of potential to move really quickly along this change curve. And I think that's sort of the exciting piece here. And it also sounds like, to your point on ESG, like not only is it a change curve in terms of like more women being in these positions, because there is a broader range of skills that we value in leaders, but also that we're seeing those results manifest in ways beyond just monetary like profits and stock performance. We're seeing it having impacts much broader than, you know, that dollar figure. And I think that's also a really exciting potential here. So
if you think about any increase in transparency, right? As soon as you're equipped with more information and you understand things better, you just gain a better ability to make a decision on things and set certain policies, right? So I think the increase in transparency amidst all this stuff that's happening is really uncovering or breaking down some of those stereotypes and unconscious biases and changing people's minds, just because now they just understand what's going on a little bit more and they're experiencing things firsthand. So I think the information that is being uncovered with everything that's happening and adapt to this new environment is really leading to that acceleration of change.
Yeah. And about that acceleration of change, not that this is a political podcast in any capacity, but I work for a social media analytics company. So be that as it may, I follow every single political figure in America and abroad. And Andrew Yang put out a tweet that essentially said, he was like, I believe we will see 10 years of change in 10 weeks. And I actually believe that trend will force us to accelerate. I mean, so a lot of these things that we're discussing, crisis forces us to do things. And so in that vein, there was another article that we'll post in the show notes that I found on Yahoo. And essentially, it was just listing a whole bunch of different aspects of our lives that may change, may not change. And so I think a couple of interesting things that they noted were forcing telemedicine as quickly as possible. I think that, you know, that was a change that was slowly rolling and I think is just now going to happen. My husband, for example, works in the healthcare field, and all of the practices that his company owns rolled out telemedicine in a week. Like it just, it it happened. It had to. I had mentioned to Michelle earlier, my sister-in-law, who is a first-year resident. Your first year of residency kind of sucks as much as they want it to suck as much as possible. So you're prepared. And she's pregnant. And in this climate, they gave her leeway to do telemedicine visits. So it's just, again, back to the empathy thing or back to the acceleration of change keeps happening. And we talked a lot about education going online, again, with kids being on at home. And a lot of kids were realizing don't have access to the internet. Again, it's really hard to have high-speed internet at the farm. I have satellite internet, and I could tell you, I was one of the very first people to complain, saying, see, look, I've been saying we need high-speed internet everywhere. It just should be a utility. It should be a utility. So all of those things were mentioned in this article, plus others. So I don't know if you guys had any additional ones that you thought were worthwhile mentioning.
Well, so I think, obviously, certain industries are more impacted than others, right? But if we think about functions across industries that are impacted regardless, are in my mind, like, one, the workforce / HR function, just because you're literally having to change the way you work, the way you set up meetings, going from in-person to over video conferencing, all these collaboration tools popping up. And then the other function too is supply chain, right? Again, regardless of what industry, there's a lot that we manufacture from some of these places that are highly impacted, right? So regardless of what industry you're in or what you're manufacturing, you're impacted just by virtue of supply chain being a key function that's negatively impacted and disrupted by Corona. That could mean significant changes to how supply chains work across industries with, and I don't know how that's necessarily going to impact globalization, right? So is that going to maybe revert some of the, hey, let's source our this particular good or that particular part of our value chain or part of this product, finished product that we're manufacturing? Should we, instead of sourcing it from all these five different places, like, is there a better way? And is that going to reverse some of the globalization effects that have been happening over the last few decades? I don't have the answer to that, but that's something that companies and governments need to think about, right, from a global trade perspective.
I definitely think that innovation will help us figure out how to be more efficient, whether it's like color my own hair. And you guys can't see me because this is a podcast as opposed to a video, but I have really, really dark hair. And I'm watching all these videos to figure out how to do that on my own because I have all this free time now. On the other hand, I'm sure there are plenty of other people using YouTube in a completely different way to learn new skills because, hey, why not? Let me learn a new language. I have a lot of time to do that. I think that's, there's a fun side to this situation where we haven't necessarily talked about as much during this particular episode, but there are realistic things that innovation will drive. So I definitely agree with that.
You guys listed a lot of different things. I think the one thing, Michelle and I were talking about this earlier, but is just the change also around, I don't want to call it working from home. I think remote work is better. I think in this situation, like, we are required to work from home because there is a pandemic. Like, it's not the same thing as the concept generally of remote work. So I think part of it is like distinguishing here what very specific to the situation we're in and what we can take and, you know, figure out a way to adapt to and make better going forward. And I think that remote work situation is really important because if it has flexibility at its core and it is not an attempt to just relocate the office environment to your home, I think it really is a different way of working. And does that allow, again, for expediting equality between men and women at work when there are more options for how you do your work? That's another piece that'll be really interesting to see. Definitely relates to a lot of the data we see about women in the workplace and why they're not in all the same, not in the same number of leadership positions as men, why they're not getting paid the same as men. And I think, again, if there are more options for people to structure their work in a way that works best for them, like more individualized planning, which is, I think, is the same with a lot of things like we've talked about with education and healthcare. There's the ability to have like a more individual focus for with some of this technology that we've been adopting. There's potential for good change.
I hope that good change leads to my not being in the dining room for a couple more months, because this chair is so uncomfortable. Hashtag first world problems.
Yeah. And let me go back to something that you were saying, Michelle. You know, there are a lot of good things coming out of it. And I know at the beginning of the episode, we were talking about a lot of the challenges, especially that parents are seeing, because, you know, it's just a very different dynamic. But it's sort of wonderful. And I, at least personally, that I get to, I just suddenly have all this time to see the baby grow and get to see every single milestone. And it's not, you know, I'm not gone for the majority of the time that he's awake. And in that perspective, I think parents are getting, they're really lucky, you know, they get to suddenly see their kids, you know, people that are most important to them a whole lot more, and see them change and adapt to this. And so I think that there is a lot of, you know, they get to have dinner every night together because there's really nothing else that they can be doing. So I think there are some really great, not even just technological changes, just like really great things that people can be grateful for.
Well, thanks, Lauren, for wrapping us up on a positive note. And speaking of, check out the episode notes if you'd like to read the full articles we referenced today.
Yes, and we always love to hear from you guys. So let us know if today's episode resonated with you. We'd love to hear your ideas and how you've been coping at this time. If you have anecdotes from the virtual happy hours or things that have been really challenging for you, send us an email at fourofakindpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram and send us a note there at fourofakindpodcast. And also, as per usual, don't forget to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks again for joining us today, and we hope you'll tune in again next time. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
Bye.